The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Some heavy-duty reading this weekend for elected officials and for you if you're up for it. The Senate has released its own health care proposal. South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham likes a lot of what's in it.
It does repeal the individual and employer mandate. It puts Medicaid on a more sustainable path, inflation. It leaves pre-existing illnesses alone, so you'll never be denied coverage because you're sick. So that's a pretty good place to start.
California Democrat Dianne Feinstein not only doesn't like the huge bill, she doesn't like the way it was drafted by a handful of Senate Republicans.
I just got to say, this is the least transparent process for a major piece of legislation I have seen in my 24 years in the Senate.
Tapes? What tapes? President Trump ends his teasing and says he knows of no recordings of his White House conversations with former FBI Director James Comey. White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders says Mr. Trump was concerned about Comey's overall credibility when one of the president's tweets suggested there might be recordings.
I certainly think that the president would hope that former director would tell the truth, but I think that it was more about, raising the question of doubt in general.
I'm Sam Litzinger at CBS News in Washington. Some of the highlights, or lowlights, depending on what you think of it, are the new Senate health care bill. The measure would cut and revamp Medicaid. That's the health care program for lower-income and disabled people. It would repeal tax increases President Obama's law imposed on higher-income people and medical industry companies to pay for expanded coverage. And it would end the tax penalty, the Obamacare statute imposed on people who don't buy insurance, in effect ending the so-called individual mandate. CBS News correspondent Stephen Portnoy joins us. Stephen, President Trump was said to have called the House bill mean. What does he think of the Senate plan?
Well, Sam, on Thursday night, the day that the bill was released, the president tweeted that he's very supportive of the bill, but he looks forward to making it really special. He said that it will require some negotiation. And of course, we know that there are a number of holdouts in the Republican Senate ranks who say that they cannot support the bill as currently constituted. So the effort is on through this weekend and into next week to try to bring those conservatives who said they couldn't support the bill on board.
Well, as of now, and of course, as you mentioned, this could really change any second, does it appear there are enough votes in the Senate to pass this health care bill?
Currently, no. And remember, the Senate Republicans are using a process that is called reconciliation that requires 51 votes. They have 52 Senate Republicans. They can afford to lose two because in a 50-50 split, Vice President Pence would cast the 51st vote in favor. But right now, there are at least four Republicans who are on record saying that they couldn't vote for the bill as currently constituted. So that's not enough support.
Do we know if President Trump will be trying to sell the bill as President Obama did with his health care plan?
I think that he will try to sell. He's described it as a negotiation, and hopefully, the president says, we'll have a deal worked out. It's interesting that insofar as we've seen the president work with Senate leaders on this, he's basically taken a hands-off approach. The White House says that senior aides to the president have been involved, and they are committing to offer what they're calling technical assistance in crafting this bill, maybe with respect to how HHS might implement it. But it does not appear as though President Trump is going to try to put the screws to anybody. That's really on the onus there is on Senate Leader Mitch McConnell.
Stephen Portnoy, the mystery of the tapes has been settled, at least I think so. President Trump has hinted there might be recordings of his White House conversations with then-FBI Director James Comey, whom he fired. So are there tapes?
The president says that he has no idea if there are any tapes. After nearly 6 weeks of this going back and forth, reporters tried to get to the bottom of it. As the president said, I'll let you know in the very near future. He tweeted on Thursday that he never made tapes and doesn't know if any tapes exist. He said in an interview that it was not a very stupid thing to do and intimated that the whole point was to try to pressure James Comey to not lie when he testified about it all. But remember, it was the president's tweet that precipitated James Comey to leak his memos that then precipitated the hiring of a special counsel that has only further exacerbated and deepened this investigation.
And Stephen, as for covering the White House these days, how hard is it to get information there? On camera, on microphone briefings have been reduced. Some reporters are saying they're having trouble getting their emails answered. Is this a problem?
It is a problem. The email thing is a problem, and the White House has acknowledged that. You know, we have lots of questions, and we get so few opportunities to ask them. You know, think of all the problems in the world and all the things that we would like to ask the president's people about on any given day. And some days the opportunities run only maybe 11 or 12 minutes. And increasingly, these exchanges are not being videotaped or carried live for the American people to see. We journalists believe wholeheartedly that it is a valuable exercise each day to illustrate not only to the American people but to the whole world that we can have a back and forth between the president's top advisors and an independent press corps who are here to ask questions, to learn about the president's policies, to sometimes ask critical questions, and to hold the president and this White House accountable for the decisions they make, for the things that they say. And those opportunities are becoming fewer.
CBS News correspondent Stephen Portnoy at the White House. Thank you.
You bet.
Many of us saw video released this week of the shooting of black driver Philando Castile by now-fired Minnesota police officer Geronimo Yanez, who was acquitted by a jury.
Don't reach for it, then. Don't pull it out. Don't pull it out.
It has many asking, how could Yanez have been acquitted? Legal analysts say the short answer seems to be prosecutors had no video showing exactly what happened inside Castile's car, leaving room for reasonable doubt in the minds of jurors. Yanez was the first of two police officers to be acquitted in a killing in less than a week. A Wisconsin jury on Wednesday found a former police officer not guilty of first-degree reckless homicide charges in the on-duty shooting of a black man last year that ignited riots in Milwaukee. It's been a week of dangerous weather in parts of the country. Chris Van Cleve says the heat was on high in much of the West.
Phoenix is known as the Valley of the Sun, but right now it feels more like the surface of the sun, prompting an excessive heat warning for southern Arizona.
Don't try to outbeat the heat, because the heat gonna outbeat you.
This heat, when we talk about 120 degrees plus, is that life-threatening heat?
It is. It's life-threatening heat for all populations, all ages.
Phoenix Fire Captain Rita Bigler.
You can skip right past heat exhaustion and go into heat stroke, which is your body's inability to cool itself.
We rode with engine 18 as the heat soared to 118. Phoenix Fire has already seen a surge of heat-related emergencies like this one.
He was having some cramping, some nausea. Just some of the signs that we look for kind of tell you it's a heat-related problem.
And in the deep south, Tropical Storm Cindy caused damage and flooded some areas in Louisiana. But there may actually be a silver lining to all these rain clouds. Farmers say all this extra water should help their rice and corn crops. Some of the latest poll numbers aren't that good for President Trump, but they aren't bothering some of his biggest fans. That and more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. Many of the people who supported Donald Trump when he was running for president still support him as president. But the latest CBS News poll suggests he's trying their patience in some areas. Meg Oliver and Erica Pizzi spoke with CBS News Elections and Surveys Director Anthony Salvanto about some of the numbers that probably aren't too popular right now at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
According to a new CBS poll, the number of people who approve of President Trump's job performance is dropping. His approval rating sits at 36%. It's the lowest since he took office. 57% disapprove of how he's handling the Oval Office.
Mr. Trump also lost support among some Republicans. 72% of them approve of his job performance. That's down from 83% at the president's 100-day mark. For a deeper look into the newest polls, let's bring in CBS News Elections and Surveys Director Anthony Salvanto. So, poll numbers keep going down. What is the driving force likely behind all of this?
Right now, it's clearly his handling of the Russia investigation, because what happens is he gets higher ratings on things like handling terrorism, handling the economy, than he does for handling that by a wide margin, and even among Republicans, as you mentioned. And, you know, that isn't to say that they don't still support him generally or that they don't like him. But specifically on his handling of that, you see these big differences. And you also see when Republicans tend to think that the matter is serious, not that they did anything wrong, but that it's serious and that really the investigation should just take its course, they're more likely to disapprove of him. And so that's what's really a drag on his overall numbers for the moment.
What jumped out at you as the most surprising result out of these numbers?
Yeah, well, that movement among Republicans is something we haven't seen before.
Right.
I mean, we've talked a long time this year about how his base is solid. That is still true, but there is a smaller subset of Republicans who are much more conditional on this. They want to see him pass legislation. They want policies to go through. And you get the impression that here that they would just like this to necessarily go away or run its course. They think that the special counsel is going to be impartial. It's just really a matter of getting to the bottom of things and then moving on.
CBS News correspondent Dean Reynolds has been talking with some Trump fans who are still fans.
At Two Brothers Restaurant in Oshkosh, Trump supporters like Ken Shanahan are getting impatient, but not with the president.
Leave him alone. Let him do what he wants to do. The media is hounding him constantly. I mean, really?
This group of retirees backs the president on most every move he makes, with one exception, says Adolf Hendricks.
I would like to see him a little bit more presidential, perhaps, a little bit more dignified.
Les Talos says enough with the tweets.
It just gives the Democrats fodder for their daily attacks on him.
Warren Thompson dismisses the big issue consuming Washington.
Do you ever talk about the Russia thing? Does it bother anybody here?
This whole thing is, as far as I'm concerned, is a conspiracy. It's a total distraction.
They are among the 72% of Republicans who remain in the president's corner, according to our new CBS News poll. But that number is down from 83% 52 days ago, and his disapproval rate among Republicans is up 7 points.
What grade would you give Trump right now?
Probably a low C.
Jennifer King, a church and school secretary, voted for Mr. Trump.
I still support him, but I would like to see some real results.
She wants tax cuts and more help for veterans, but believes the president is too easily sidetracked.
He's too busy fighting media. He's too busy fighting accusations.
What do you think is his problem?
I personally think it's his mouth.
But whether committed or wavering, these Trump voters believe the president is being treated unfairly, and most are willing to give him at least 2 years on the job before they would reconsider their support.
How much does the government know about your private life? Maybe too much, according to the American Civil Liberties Union. CBS's Paula Reed says the organization is suing the Justice Department.
The Justice Department is facing a lawsuit from the ACLU demanding to know more about government surveillance of U.S. citizens. Under the current law, the government only has to reveal its surveillance of individuals if the evidence gathered is used in a criminal case. So most people who have been monitored would never know they had been watched. In 2013, the government expanded its requirements for when they have to tell people they're being monitored, but the new policy is mostly secret. The ACLU has sued to make those rules public.
The PR department at Uber has been busy lately. It's been dealing with everything from customer complaints to the resignation of one of the car service's founding fathers. Many investors say Travis Kalanick had to go, so he did.
After building a nearly $70 billion empire in less than a decade, co-founder and chief executive Travis Kalanick is out at Uber.
This is the tricky balance of this kind of business.
His resignation comes after the company suffered a number of missteps, including a sexual harassment controversy and a federal probe into Uber's alleged use of software to avoid some law enforcement. Kalanick himself has been at the center of controversy, including this heated back and forth with an Uber driver caught on camera in February.
What you changed the whole business.
What?
You dropped the prices.
On black.
Yes, you did.
Bull-
with $20.
Bull-
In a statement to the New York Times, Kalanick wrote, quote, I love Uber more than anything in the world. And at this difficult moment in my personal life, I have accepted the investors' request to step aside so that Uber can go back to building rather than be distracted with another fight.
I guess at the end of the day, we felt like we were good people doing good work.
Reports say Kalanick was forced out of the company he helped create after his leave of absence announced last week was not enough to satisfy investors.
CBS News correspondent DeMarco Morgan. By now, you've probably seen or maybe even own one of those fidget spinners, those things that kind of look like miniature fans gone mad. CBS News correspondent Don Champion says health officials say it's time to make sure small children don't play with them unless they're being strictly supervised.
You don't think that would ever happen?
Firefighter Shane Holtzclaw recently had to rescue his own daughter, Emma.
It was just one of those freak accidents.
Like millions of kids, Emma has a fidget spinner. But when she was playing with it a couple of weeks ago, one of the metal bearings inside came loose.
And then it flew out, and then it went in my mouth.
Emma started choking. Her dad gave her back blows until she started breathing. At the hospital, an x-ray revealed that she ended up swallowing the metal piece about the size of a quarter.
Be careful with them. An accident can happen at any time.
The Consumer Product Safety Commission is investigating incidents involving fidget spinners. Last month in Houston, a 10-year-old needed surgery to remove a bearing caught in her esophagus. And in Oregon, Caden Boyd also needed surgery after he swallowed this bearing.
I think parents need to educate their children about the risks of these.
Dr. Nina Shapiro is from UCLA Mattel Children's Hospital.
So I think just not to give these to younger children, children under six, and for the older children to really explain that these are toys, but they also have risks. They should not be put in their mouths. They should not be taken apart.
Holtzclaw is sharing his daughter's story for one reason.
I don't want to see a parent have to go through what I went through. I don't want to see a kid choke.
Don Champion, CBS News, Dallas.
You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Ransomware is software that can infiltrate your business through email, enabling cyber criminals to hijack sensitive information as ransom for your own data's release. Leveraging Barracuda email security with advanced threat detection can stop a ransomware attack in its tracks. As an added measure, Barracuda Backup allows you to recover your data without having to surrender to extortion. Crime doesn't pay when you protect your business data with Barracuda. Go to Barracuda.com/ransomware to learn more.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. The North Koreans are working hard to build a missile that can carry a nuclear weapon to the United States. It's a very real threat, and it's one the Trump administration has to deal with sooner rather than later. North Korean nukes are also a menace to American ally South Korea, which has a new president, Moon Jae-in. CBS News correspondent Nora O'Donnell traveled to Seoul to speak with him in his first major broadcast interview.
It has been fascinating to be here on the ground and do some reporting about what is going to be this fundamental shift in policy in dealing with the North Koreans. President Moon told us that he believes the Obama administration's policy of strategic patience was a failure, in his words. So he wants to restart dialogue with the North Koreans. The question is, how is that going to happen when Kim Jong-un has promised to make this country, South Korea, in his words, a sea of fire? President Trump has called Kim Jong-un a madman with nuclear weapons. Do you believe that he is a madman? And why do you want to talk to a madman?
Kim Jong-un is not a rational person, but I would like to also note that President Trump once even mentioned he is willing to talk with Kim Jong-un over a burger, and that he has another point he mentioned that it would be an honor to be able to meet Kim Jong-un. So I believe President Trump went much further than I did.
Do you believe that Kim Jong-un likes burgers?
Amado. Most likely, maybe.
Most likely.
진정으로 바라는 것은. So I believe what Kim Jong-un would want the most is to have a security guarantee for his regime. So there is a possibility that Kim Jong-un continues to make the bluff with his nuclear weapons programs, but deep inside he is actually yearning or wanting dialogue. But in the end, the only way to find out is to have a dialogue with North Korea.
Let me ask you, it is the view of U.S. intelligence that North Korea will likely test
an ICBM this year. Would you oppose a preemptive strike by the United States to take that out before the test?
I believe when it comes to North Korea's nuclear missile threats, it is the Republic of Korea that is more dire. For the United States, the North Korean threat is a future threat on the horizon. But for us, this is a matter of life and death. When it comes to preemptive strike that you mentioned, I believe that this is something we can discuss at a later stage when the threat has become even more urgent.
So is that your message for President Trump when you meet with him at the White House?
So I believe that we will probably have such discussions. The two of us will both be in office and working together for the next 5 years. And the two of us also share the common goals of resolving the North Korean nuclear issue, establishing a peace regime on the Korean Peninsula, and building peace and security in Northeast Asia. So if the two of us could pull together and accomplish these common goals, then I believe that this will be the most fruitful achievements that we can achieve during our terms in office. And I also believe that this will be the greatest diplomatic achievement for President Trump as well.
Making relations between the U.S. and North Korea even worse, if that's possible, is the death of American student Otto Warmbier, who was detained on a visit to the North, then sent home in a coma. He died not long after. CBS News correspondent Margaret Brennan says Trump administration officials are searching for an appropriate response.
Well, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said just a few days ago that they are actively considering putting a ban or some form of further restrictions to prevent Americans from traveling to North Korea. The State Department already warns against traveling there in any way because diplomats are very limited in terms of the kind of access they could have if you were to have any kind of difficulty health-wise or security-wise while you are there. Now they're looking at restricting you from even being able to fly into the country in the first place. But beyond that, we know that U.S. officials are continuing to consider ways to further isolate this rogue regime, whether it's further pressure at the U.N., more pressure via sanctions. Particularly, they believe that there is further room to run here in terms of what Beijing can do to help out the United States and to help themselves counter the nuclear threat from North Korea. So in the wake of Warmbier's death, though, this adds to sort of the emotions and the feeling of urgency around this. It just seems to worsen an already tense relationship. But the prime focus here for the Trump administration is on the nuclear threat, not just the fate of the Americans, including the three who continue to be behind bars.
Many analysts are worried the U.S. and Russia may be on a collision course, accidentally perhaps, in Syria. Washington and Moscow are on opposite sides of the long Syrian civil war. Now U.S. forces have shot down a Syrian warplane, which prompted the Russians to threaten to target U.S. aircraft in certain areas. CBS News correspondent Holly Williams says tensions are rising in the region.
The U.S. coalition says that a Syrian regime Su-22 fighter jet dropped bombs close to U.S.-backed forces on the ground southwest of Raqqa. Now, those forces are fighting against ISIS. They're supported by U.S. troops. And the bombs were so close that the U.S. sent an F-18 to shoot down the Syrian jet, the first time that's happened during the Syrian civil war. Now, Russia, which backs the Syrian regime, has retaliated by saying that it will now track all U.S. coalition aircraft as targets. Russia also says that it is shutting down cooperation to prevent mid-air collisions, though General Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said that the two countries are still communicating, and he warned against hyperbole. As ISIS loses ground in Syria, pro-regime forces and U.S.-backed forces are bumping up against each other, increasing the danger of a miscalculation, with the worst-case scenario being the U.S. and Russia drawn into a direct conflict.
If you think you have a tough job, consider Jared Kushner's. His father-in-law, President Trump, has given him the task of trying to bring peace to the Mideast, or at least peace between Israelis and Palestinians. He's been talking to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and he's been talking to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Many Middle East experts say it's good that the Trump administration's taking another crack at settling a dispute that's been simmering, sometimes boiling over, for decades. But they also say they don't expect much from Kushner's efforts, at least not anytime soon. They say he's sure to find out one thing right away. Even the most experienced Mideast negotiator can get lost in the conflicting positions. And Kushner's not an experienced Mideast negotiator. We'll see if he's a quick study. If you don't like the way the government sometimes wastes your tax money, well, you won't like this story.
When the Afghan army needed new uniforms back in 2007, Afghanistan's defense minister did not opt for the desert pattern he could have had from the Pentagon for free. Instead, he chose an expensive woodland camouflage pattern costing $28 million, which the Pentagon paid. This, even though only 2% of Afghanistan actually is woodland. Now the Pentagon's Special Inspector General is asking why, but any answers won't bring back that $28 million. Vicki Barker, CBS News.
Please follow us on Twitter. We have headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm at Sam Litzinger on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. Heart disease is the number one killer of women, but a new survey by the Journal of the American College of Cardiology finds it's not a top priority for women, in part because many don't think they're at risk. Some think there's a stigma about even discussing some things with their doctors. Cardiologist Dr. Tara Narula spoke with our colleagues at CBS this morning about the study.
A lot of women say that they want to lose weight before they go to the doctor. They say they'd much rather do their taxes than go to their doctor. How can this be when heart disease is so important and so prevalent for women?
It is killing one woman every 80 seconds. Whoa, and yet women don't recognize that this is their biggest threat. So one of the barriers is that it's just not real for a lot of women. They say, I'm in shape, I'm too young, I don't have a lot of risk factors. In fact, in this survey, many said, I don't really know any woman who's had heart disease. So it needs to become more of a real threat to them. It needs to become personalized. That's one barrier. Another barrier is certainly the social stigma that you mentioned, which is a lot of women feel that if they talk about heart disease with their doctor, they might be looked down upon in the sense that, well, maybe
they'll be judged.
They'll be judged that they don't eat right, that they don't exercise. And so, in fact, 45% of women in the survey said they wanted to lose a few pounds before they went to the doctor so they could be their best self. I mean, that sounds crazy, but that's how these women are thinking about it. Other issues, women tend to downplay their symptoms. I can't tell you how many times women tell me, well, it's just stress, I'm sure. Or they don't recognize their risk factors or symptoms. You know, 40% of women who have a heart attack never had chest pain. They can present atypically with nausea, anxiety, jaw pain. So it's important that we make that awareness known.
So how often should we be screened for heart issues?
So this should be a conversation that happens at every visit. In fact, the American Heart Association recommends that women start having what they call a well woman visit annually, where you talk about risk factors, you get screened. One of the most interesting things about this survey is that doctors, primary care, and cardiologists felt unprepared to deal with women and cardiovascular health. And that's a problem. In fact, they weren't prioritizing it. They were prioritizing in this survey weight issues and breast health, not cardiovascular disease.
Tara, why is that a problem at this point? We've heard about this for years. The doctors tend to look at men for heart disease, but not women. Why haven't doctors gotten the message?
It has been under-researched, underfunded, understudied in general. And I think one of the big issues of this survey is to raise awareness in doctors that they need to be screening women every single visit. They need to be talking about this, not waiting for their patients to bring it up, because 71% of the women in the study waited for their doctor to bring it up. And if the doctor didn't bring it up, it didn't get discussed. So it needs to be a discussion happening at every visit. Women can have risk factors that are particular to them, too, that they don't often think about: depression, anxiety, autoimmune diseases like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, pregnancy complications. So important to understand the whole picture.
And bottom line, an overwhelming majority of heart disease is preventable.
It is. That is the good news.
Yes. Thank you. Always good to have you here, Dr. Tara Narula. Thank you.
So be proactive with your doctor. Ask questions, raise issues, maybe save your life. By the way, some medical experts are concerned that whatever health care plan comes out of Congress, assuming there is one, may confuse people about their own care because they won't be as sure about what it is and what is and isn't covered, what their copay should be, all sorts of issues. The best advice, review whatever you have now, and again, ask lots of questions. Maybe a while before there are major changes implemented, but a lot of the responsibility for your health care will be with you. President Trump has been promising a revamp of America's infrastructure. CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg says one area that could use some help is our rail system. Amtrak is looking for some money to try to get itself back on track.
For over a century, railroads were the backbone of America. Trains moved people between cities and provided freight transport for industry. But by the mid-20th century, competition from interstate highways and airlines forced many railroads out of business. In 1971, Amtrak was established as America's passenger rail service. But from day one, it was plagued with problems it still hasn't solved. Most routes never made a profit. And in many cases, Amtrak doesn't even own the tracks.
There's about 150 trains on the whole Northeast Corridor.
Stephen Gardner oversees planning for Amtrak.
In order to run fast, frequent, reliable passenger trains, you really need to build a system for just that.
A dedicated system.
A dedicated system.
But it's not just dedicated systems. It's funding new tracks across the entire Amtrak network. The Acela, which is supposedly our high-speed rail system, can only go 150 miles per hour on a small section of track. To compare, the bullet train in Japan can reach speeds of 200 miles an hour to make the 250-mile trip between Tokyo and Osaka.
We're decades behind our counterparts from around the world.
Deborah Hirschman is president and CEO of the National Safety Council.
Part of this is because we don't have a dedicated funding stream that supports that initiative.
The good news is that Amtrak has ordered 28 high-speed trains for the Northeast Corridor, with the first of these scheduled to be in service by 2021. The problem? There are currently no plans or the necessary funds to build the tracks needed to support high-speed rail.
I think what's lagged is kind of the broader issue, which is investment in infrastructure and transportation generally. That if you look across our network, we are underinvesting in all of our assets.
Those dedicated systems are now being built, some with private money. In California, a high-speed rail link between the Los Angeles area and San Francisco is now under construction. But we'll need to be patient. It won't be finished before 2029, at the earliest.
Suppose you're lucky enough to be able to save some money. You plan to retire, but you also want to buy a house. Which should you save for first? Well, ideally, you'd save for both. But CBS News correspondent Meg Oliver talked with Yahoo Finance editor Jeannie Ahn about how to set your priorities if you have to do that.
Retirement savings is the last thing anybody wants to do, but it's the first thing you need to do. So think about the sheer amount that you need in retirement. It's more than the cost of buying a home, raising a child, college education combined.
Wow.
So think about that when you want to delay retirement. It's tempting to want to save for a home first because it's nearer term. But any amount that you're missing out on in your earlier years, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars later on in retirement when you absolutely need it.
So should the value of your home be factored into your retirement planning?
So many people consider their home their biggest asset. So of course you'd want to factor that in. But remember, a home is not a liquid asset, right? So just because you pour thousands of dollars into it doesn't mean that you can tap that money when you want it at the value that you wanted. So to be safe, remember to try to factor in your home aside from retirement planning, because remember, the housing bubble burst less than a decade ago. People are still underwater for that. So it's safe to think of it as an aside.
What's the market like now? Let's say somebody is on the fence. Would you recommend buying a home now?
It's not a simple, straightforward answer because you need to be on financially solid ground on so many levels. But right now, the national average for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4%. Very, very attractive for first-time homebuyers or homebuyers in general. But you need to make sure that you have enough down payment, that you have enough liquid, that your debt-to-income ratio is healthy.
Remember, even saving just a few dollars a month can help your future finances. Wish I'd been smart enough to follow that advice when I was younger. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS Radio News podcasts are now on Spotify. Listen to great programs like Face the Nation, the CBS News Weekend Roundup, CBS This Morning, and more. They're all on your Spotify app using your iOS or Android device. CBS Radio News on Spotify, the leading global music streaming service, now lets you find the right podcast for every moment. Open Spotify to listen to CBS Radio News podcasts today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. You may have heard stories about robots taking over the world. They aren't, at least not yet. But we are seeing a lot more of them, everywhere from operating rooms to city streets. CBS News correspondent Mireya Villarreal says there's a growing backlash in San Francisco, where Supervisor Norman Yee is worried that delivery robots and people are becoming a dangerous mix on city sidewalks.
From your favorite restaurant to your front door.
And it smells so good.
This high-tech robot could one day replace your delivery guy.
With these robots, we can actually provide these services to people, give them actual affordable access to the goods that they want and need.
To do that, these marble robots travel on San Francisco's sidewalks. But now one lawmaker wants to hit the brakes, banning robots altogether because of safety concerns and a lack of regulations.
Then you start asking questions like, what if this, like, 5 of them, 10 of them coming down the street? Let's make sure that the sidewalks are safe for people.
The city already blocks bikes and skateboards on sidewalks. Alice Chu and Pai Ra work for an organization that advocates for seniors and the disabled. They worry these delivery bots will create more problems.
We don't have enough room as it is. And why make it more complex?
I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do when I encounter one of them?
We're teaching the robot's learning, and we're learning from the people around us.
Harrison Shi is Marble's head of product and operations. He says their robots use technology similar to self-driving cars, relying on at least 4 cameras and advanced sensors to perceive the world around them.
So it has 16 scans that it's doing, this specific model, and it's collecting millions of data points a second. And so it can tell the distance to everything around it.
The robots are constantly mapping city sidewalks to optimize their routes, and for now, take a human chaperone along on their trips. Robot delivery companies are popping up around the country, from Arkansas to Washington, D.C. Several other states, including Idaho and Virginia, have passed laws welcoming the technology. Wisconsin is considering similar legislation. But the fight over their future could come down to the local level.
One of the things that I think we value in San Francisco is really people.
Over robots.
Over robots.
As weird as it sounds.
I don't want to picture myself as anti-robot. It's just that I'm pro-people on sidewalks.
Mireya Villarreal, San Francisco.
You ever hear of a food pharmacy? CBS News correspondent Jan Crawford tells us about an effort by health officials to, in effect, prescribe healthy foods to people who are seriously overweight. Many of them are poor and have been living on relatively cheap, relatively unhealthy junk food.
At Geisinger Hospital in central Pennsylvania, food deliveries start early, turning these medical professionals into temporary grocers.
Once you have the eggs counted, then we should be good.
It's all part of a new fresh food pharmacy, now open in the heart of coal country, where shuttered mines have contributed to high unemployment and rising poverty, making healthy eating a low priority.
And what's your favorite fruit or vegetable that you get from us?
Beans.
The program was created by Dr. Andrea Feinberg, Geisinger's medical director for health and wellness.
We have a higher incidence of obesity, a higher incidence of diabetes, and food insecurity.
And what do you offer them?
So we offer them hope. We're offering a new way to look at diabetes. There are pockets of communities around the United States where the word has not gotten out that food is really medicine.
Started just 9 months ago, the program already serves more than 60 patients and their families, providing healthy food free of charge to more than 200 people each week, along with nutrition classes and cooking advice.
If you're used to eating, you know, pizza and burgers and french fries, and you come in here and there's kale and quinoa, that's a big transition. Do people like it?
So people complain. They're
not complain.
They're not that excited. First of all, we ask them just to be flexible. Try it. You don't like it? No problem. Come back and tell us. We'll come up with new recipes.
Geisinger is one of the first to set up a standalone pharmacy, but it draws inspiration for more than 70 food prescription programs across the country, all hoping to reverse a frightening trend. More than 100 million Americans are either diabetic or pre-diabetic, and the Centers for Disease Control predicts that by the year 2050, 1 in 3 adults in the U.S. could have diabetes.
We haven't had turkey burger in a while.
Rita Perkins has been diabetic for more than 20 years. After enrolling in the food pharmacy program in March, she cut her blood sugar and cholesterol in half.
You just made yourself some lunch.
Yeah, it's a whole wheat tortilla pizza.
You feel like this program is really making a difference in your life.
It has.
How long do you think you'll stay with it?
Probably for the rest of my life.
Dr. Feinberg says Perkins' results are not unique.
It's over the top successful.
How so?
It's worked for every single patient.
It's worked?
For every single patient.
That's a pretty good success rate.
We're talking about reversing the diabetes, curing the type 2 diabetes, and help the patients move themselves from the sick category to the healthy category.
Now, healthier food like kale and tomatoes, eggplant, that may seem expensive, but Geisinger says that despite providing it all for free, they're actually planning to save money by cutting the long-term medical costs. In fact, the program has been so successful, they're already looking to expand to about a dozen other locations across Pennsylvania and New Jersey.
Do your kids spend pretty much every second on their smartphones? I can hear your parents saying, Sam, obviously you don't have kids, because that is a stupid question. Of course they do. Well, CBS News correspondent Vladimir Dutier says some people in Colorado think it's time for a ban on smartphone sales to very young kids.
They're always in it, and it's hard to get them to focus and get their attention.
That's why Melanie Davidson, a working mom in Denver,
okay, you two, it's time to read,
restricts the amount of time her two kids spend on their phones. Dr. Tim Farnham says he's trying to help.
I'm with a group. We're trying to get a ballot initiative.
He's drumming up support through his organization, Parents Against Underage Smartphones, for a proposal to outlaw sales of smartphones for children under 13. Stores would have to ask about the age of the intended user and could face fines for multiple violations.
Is not right. We're abandoning kids to technology, and it's doing them a lot of harm.
But Farnham's proposed ban faces bipartisan opposition. A Democratic state lawmaker called it the wrong solution to a serious problem, while a Republican suggested it's the work of those who sit around all day dreaming up ways to control your life. Melanie Davidson says it's not the answer for her children.
I'm all for policy as a tool and as a tool for change, but a rule like this and a law like this is an overreach of government's role in our lives.
Supporters still have to collect almost 100,000 signatures to get it on next year's ballot. The proposal would continue to allow sales of basic cell phones for kids, just not smartphones with all the games and the apps.
We appreciate your listening to the Weekend Roundup on your smartphone or however. Please keep in mind you can do a search online to find past episodes. Search for CBS News Weekend Roundup. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. I'm Sam Litzinger, CBS News.